Line, a weekly radio program on WFHB that focuses on issues in Indiana's prison system and beyond.
I'm Emma Johnson.
And I'm Mia Beach.
And we're your hosts for this program. Behind the prison walls, a message is called a kite. Whispered words, a note passed hand to hand, or requests submitted to guards for medical care. Illicit or not, sending a kite means trusting that other people will bear it farther along until it reaches its destination. On KiteLine, we hope to pass along those words across the prison walls.
This episode's content was generated at the Bend the Bars Conference in Columbus, Ohio from August 26th to 28th. This conference was created to bring together organizers, former prisoners, and those interested in offering support to prisoners planning to be involved in the upcoming September 9th National Prison Strike. We will hear from attendees on why they came to Bend the Bars, learn a little about the upcoming September 9th Prison Strike, and get updates on the prisoners in Wisconsin who are still on hunger strike. We start off this episode with a letter we received from an inmate in the local Monroe County Jail. She wrote this back in June, but we're just now getting a chance to read it. She writes, "Since last Friday, this being 6/3/16, we've been on lockdown for long periods of time with three or more people in a cell due to they being the jail, shut down the only other women's block that held medium and maximum security female inmates. We now split all the time we get out here in E block, and the conditions are getting worse and worse. Even if every minimum security female wanted to sign up for the allowed 4 visits a week, there's not enough time when we're out of the cell or lockdown. The block is also overpopulated. This is why when the medium security have time out, the people on the floor have to find a cell to go to while they are out. This only makes the cells hotter during these times. We've only been getting about 4 hours out a day, and there are over 30 minimum security female inmates currently in the block. This is hardly enough time to shower if we all wanted one. I do believe this is also a health department issue, and that they should be contacted, and we are also probably violating fire safety standards, as so many people per square feet." She asks that people get a hold of the ACLU or the local health department. Now we'll hear from some people who attended Bend the Bars, which was a conference consisting of informational workshops, a demonstration outside of the Columbus jail, call-ins from many prisoners, and workshops on prisoner support. Let's get started.
My name is Allie Maloney, and I am a journalist here at Bend the Bars, mostly to give support. I have friends that are behind bars. One has been awaiting trial since 2013 in a county jail in the small rural North Carolina town where I grew up. His case really got me personally linked in understanding the way the prison systems work, understanding the way that courts work. So from the bottom up, I started looking at it through this lens of, okay, so what is Demetrius going through right now? Where is he sitting right now? Who's, you know, what's he waiting on? Who is he waiting on? Once I started plugging into those, you know, really using like the news eye that I've been trained with, I realized that like the oppression is everywhere. It starts from, you know, a person walking down the street who might be targeted. They're targeting people into jails and then into prison. You know, when you look at the numbers and you look at the actual data, if you know that more people now are incarcerated in the United States than on any other continent on the planet, and at a rate that's just, you know, blows other nations out of the water, it makes you look around and say, okay, so what's different about the United States? And our particular breed of racism is extremely American. It's extremely unique, and I think that if I am bound to fighting racism, then I have to fight it everywhere that I see it, and I know that prisons are, as an institution, racist. So I'm here to learn more from the organizers about how I can take my passion for, you know, my one friend's case and apply it to my news writing and apply it, what small ways can I adjust my life so that I'm actively working to help people on the inside. What language can I use in my articles? What articles can I cover? Because now more than ever, more people are talking about prisons. So it's like, okay, how do I help build the hype? How do I call on my friends who maybe don't come from the same background that I do and teach them about class issues and how that relates to race issues and how that relates to gender and how those things all directly relate to prisons? Mm-hmm.
And so part of Bend the Bars is that we're trying to strategize how to support prisoners who might be participating in the September 9th prison strike. And I'm interested to find out why people on the outside are supporting it.
Mm-hmm. I'm supporting the September 9th strike out of awe, like in awe of the bravery of the prisoners who are willing to defy the status quo in a place that doesn't allow you to do so without violent repercussions. I think the more history that I learn and the more people I'm exposed to in terms of reading their stories about political prisoners throughout time, especially in recent history, I think it's Alfred Woodfox who's one of the gentlemen whose story caught me in a news cycle last year, and I was so attached to, I was rooting for this person's release after being in solitary for, I think, 40 years. So I was so attached to his release because it was happening in my news cycle that I started looking for it elsewhere. I started looking for examples and cases. So in standing with people who in 2016 are being extremely bold, extremely brave in the highest order, it's the least I can do on the outside is to keep learning, keep listening, and to take what they're telling me and spread that message as far as I can, because I have the privilege of being on the outside and having a platform.
I'm here because I identify as a prison and jail abolitionist. And whenever there's an opportunity to network with other people who feel the same way, I want to take advantage of that, because I think one of the things that's most difficult about doing this kind of work is that you're not necessarily the one that's going to be feeling the retaliation. It's the people inside. So it's also like really sensitive work. And I just, I've only started doing abolition work within the past 2 years. And so I know I have a lot to learn, and I want to learn how to kind of decrease any kind of harm as possible, or at least the kind of harm that people were not ready to sign up for.
I joined the ACJ Health Justice Project, and it was the first anti-prison group I joined and got involved with. For me, even the idea of prison abolition is a newer idea to me, and so I want to just further educate myself on it. You know, I'm supportive of the idea, all for it. So I just want to learn and strategize how to go about the whole process.
One of the things I was really interested in was learning about people who've started doing kind of newsletters that are and publishing work done by our community members who are currently incarcerated. And how they go about, one, collecting that information, distributing that information to people who are incarcerated, ways to fight back if things are being inhibited. So that was really interesting to me, because I think, like we've talked about a lot at this event, is like the number one thing that prisons and jails are supposed to do is to kind of cut off community members and to cut them from communication. And that's just such a great direct action to give people a voice. So that was really interesting.
For me, it was just more awareness of the retaliation inside the prison, mm-hmm. especially the most recent conversation about hunger strikes, the psychological trauma they can carry and the power they can carry and how revolutionary it can be.
Welcome back to Kiteline. This episode, we're focusing on the recent Bend the Bars conference in Columbus, Ohio, and the upcoming September 9th prison strike. Next, we'll hear from Ben, who told us about the strike and talked about ways folks on the outside can lend support. Here's Ben.
So September 9th is a call to action that originated in prisons, primarily in Alabama and Ohio, but also with prisoners elsewhere. There is growing resistance to prisons happening all across the country, from Georgia work stoppages to the California hunger strikes to things in immigrant detention centers in Texas, and the Free Alabama movement. All of these things were like increasingly happening with greater and greater frequency and potency. And so, but the media was blocking them all out, and it was really hard to build the necessary outside support. And so an idea that Sadiq Abdullah Hassan had and has been talking to me about for years was making something happen on a national level. And as soon as we started talking with folks in Alabama about that idea, they were like, we've been thinking that as well, and prisoners elsewhere as well. And so it reached a point of communication capacity between these different like leaders of prison resistance movements in various places, where they had the confidence that they were like, okay, 2016, we're going to pull this off. We're going to make this happen. And so then us on the outside began hustling and building the support to actually make that go down and make it so that gets the awareness and the outside support necessary to make it successful. There's many different ways to get involved in supporting what's going on. We're looking for decentralized support networks, so we want people to connect with folks in your city or at least your state, because you know there are federal prisons, but most of the organizing is happening at state-level facilities, and there's different grievances, different issues, different things that resonate more. I mean, there's a lot of common things that occur across the whole country, but in each state, the demands are going to be different, the terrain is going to be different, and so we're encouraging people to work on a statewide level. The biggest ask that's coming from Alabama and from prisoners in general is to go to the site of production, to go to the prisons where they are going to be protesting themselves, to make a visible and audible presence there, ideally. A lot of these facilities don't allow that, but to show up in solidarity with the prisoners at the prisons themselves. We're encouraging people to also create rallies at local sites like corporations that benefit from prison labor. And there's dozens of them. McDonald's and Starbucks are a couple of very visible ones that are easy targets that are all over the place, so it's easy to spot. Also, the headquarters or central office of a Department of Corrections is another good target. If there's often offices in larger cities or in the capital or of the state or whatever, and constant phone calls. The more that the DOCs are receiving phone calls from the outside supporting the prisoners, that there is a constant presence of support and solidarity, both phone calls, letters, emails, as well as letters and communication with the prisoners. The more mail a prisoner gets, the more respect they get from other prisoners and from guards, because it demonstrates that they have connections on the outside. So if the people who are leading the strike are getting piles and piles of mail, then that shows both the guards and the other prisoners that they're doing something right, and that encourages more participation or stays the hands of the guards who want to retaliate against them.
If people are looking to seek out companies that use prison labor, how are they going to find those different places?
There's a couple of different ways to do that on supportprisonresistance.net. On the resources tab, there's a link to a couple of articles that go in depth on prison labor and on the corporations that use prison labor. So that those have good lists. Those are not super up to date. But it's also possible to do research to look into what is being produced in your facility. If you contact us through SPR or contact IWOC by going to iwoc.noblogs.org and just send an email, we'll connect you with a way to do that research. The other way is to actually just correspond with the prisoner and be like, what is it that you're making? What is it that people who are working in the factory is making? And how do you want us to intervene in that?
We recently reported on the Wisconsin prisoner hunger strike, which is still ongoing. Ben gives us some updates on that.
The information is very difficult to get. There are between 2 and 6 people on hunger strike right now, we believe. There are people coming on and coming off. But the important thing, Cesar De Leon and Laron McKinley Bay have been refusing food since June 7th. Their demand is a 1-year cap on administrative confinement. They are calling their protest dying to live. They would rather die than continue to be in administrative confinement in the torture chambers that are Wisconsin control units. The control units in Wisconsin are atrocious. There are people who are killed in there. There are people who commit suicide in there. There are so many mental health issues. There's this amazing woman that I've become friends with named Peggy Swan, who has been doing support for years on these issues and trying to bring them to light. So she has a huge litany of tragedies that have occurred in the control units in Wisconsin prisons. We also have friends who have done time and have those experiences, who have led some of the protests that we had against this and in solidarity with these hunger strikers. It's a desperate situation. The demand for a one-year cap on administrative confinement is a very ambitious demand. These guys are stubbornly committed to it, and they're going to push that through. And we have done everything we can on the outside to mount support for them. We've gotten lawmakers on board. We've gotten call-ins, continuous call-ins. People should go to solitarytorture.blogspot.com, get information about this, who to call in. You can support in that way from anywhere. But we have also been showing up at the DOC office, at public events, at the Waupun Correctional Institution. We had 40 people marching circles around that place and chanting and raising a ruckus. And Chance Zombor, who led that march, did time in there, and he was like, nobody in there can hear us, this 30-foot concrete wall. There's no way anybody in there is going to see us. And the way the things are laid out inside there, there's a wall, and then there's a hallway, and then there's the cells, so they're not going to hear us either. But it's important to be out here, and it's important to be part of this, and to be raising attention and connection with these issues. The DOC started on June 17th force-feeding the guys. Three times a day, they shove a tube down their nose, force food into their stomach. It's a very painful and dangerous procedure. It is possible to tear someone's esophagus. It's possible to put fluid in someone's lungs. You can kill people by force feeding them, especially if they're resisting and fighting back and not complying with doing it. And then they stopped force feeding them after the protest that we did for 71 hours. And during that time, the prisoners also refused to drink water because on their empty stomachs, the poisoned water of Waupun Correctional Facility, which is a very old prison built in 1851, lots of lead pipes, lots of lead and copper in the water, makes people sick all the time when your digestion is already messed up by refusing food and not having anything other than like nutritional slop, like ensure drink stuff shoved into your stomach for such a long time, that water is even worse. But they're not allowed to buy bottled water from the commissary because they're on hunger strike, which doesn't make sense. So the DOC is forcing them to also be going on a thirst strike, which is incredibly dangerous. You can't live more than 72 hours without water. Most human beings die at that point. The DOC kept them without food or water for 72 hours and then force-fed them, which is even worse, because if you force-feed someone who's dehydrated, then all the electrolytes in their body goes to absorbing or dealing with that food, and it dehydrates them further. Your metabolism shifts when you haven't eaten for 3 days, and then suddenly rapidly shifting it back can cause heart problems, heart attacks, kidney failure. The Cesar is describing great pain in his kidneys. A few weeks ago, we heard word from another prisoner who saw guards dragging his unconscious body across the range back to his cell because he passed out because of the hunger strike. So they are at that urgent point in their situation, and we need to be increasing the pressure on the DOC, and we need to get concessions from the DOC. We've done actions at the home of the Secretary of the Department of Corrections, as well as one of the most abusive guards in Waupun. We've been mounting all the pressure that we can, and we need to step it up. We have an open letter written to the DOC by a clinical psychologist, like a professional, and so we're encouraging people to read that, and then I think we're going to try to get some of those large organizations like the American Medical Association, the World Medical Association, who have denounced force feeding and saying that force feeding is never ethical, to also try to pressure the DOC. And we're at a life and death situation on that. And so it's terrifying and it's frustrating. It's difficult to have done more than I've ever done for a hunger strike support in the past and to have gotten less out of it than I've ever gotten. But we're going to keep fighting, and we're going to find a way through. June 7th to now is, I think, approaching 80 days. They were being force-fed from the 10th day, so normally a hunger strike can't go to 80 days long, but with the force-feeding, that extends the process.
Kiteline wants your feedback. You can reach us via email at kitelineradio@gmail.com or find us on Facebook. Are you someone affected by the prison system? If you or a family member have a story you want shared on the program, please email us at kitelineradio@gmail.com. We also welcome you to record something for us to put on the air. To record a message for the show or to send a message to a family member or loved one who's currently behind the walls of an Indiana prison, please call 812-269-2512 and record your message. You can also write to us at Kiteline Radio, P.O. Box 2422, Bloomington, Indiana, 47402. So visit our website at kitelineradio.noblogs.org. The Midwest Pages to Prisoners Project is an all-volunteer effort that strives to encourage self-education among prisoners in the United States. To get involved, we encourage you to come to their volunteer hours to learn more. The volunteer hours are Sunday, 2 to 5 p.m., Monday, 6 to 9 p.m., Tuesday, 12 to 3 p.m., Wednesday, 3:30 to 6 p.m., and Thursday, 6 to 9 p.m. More information about Pages to Prisoners, donating, or helping out can be found at pagestoprisoners.org. Kiteline is solely responsible for the content here on the show. The views expressed on Kiteline do not necessarily express the opinions of WFHB, its contributors, or any affiliates airing this program. This has been Kiteline on WFHB. Join us every Friday evening at 5:30 for news stories and discussion regarding prison and its impact on our communities. Thanks for listening.